We'll turn to Romans chapter 12, please. Romans chapter 12, and we'll begin there in just a moment. Good to have everyone with us tonight. We had a good number present this morning. Even though we had a number of our regular members who were traveling, we had a good number of visitors that were with us. And we were always glad to see them, many of whom we've seen before. But we were glad they were here nonetheless. Glad that some who were gone this morning are back tonight. We have a few people who have signed up for the booth, and I appreciate everyone who signed up. I think there's only one more hour that doesn't have anybody down, but I did want to say that don't think that each hour is limited to only two people. If you would like to work at a particular hour, and there's somebody already down, go ahead and put your name down. There can be more than two people in the tent at the same time. And that will probably look good to everyone who's coming by from the community. And looking forward to that good event. I hope it's going to have good effect. I know we had a number last year who stopped by, and we gave out a number of DVDs and a number of tracks, and had a few other people stop by and talk, and some other things of interest that were mentioned. And I'm hoping this year we'll have an even better response, especially at our meeting coming up the next day. And so be praying about that and be praying for our meeting. I was able to talk to Chris the other day, and he's looking forward to being here with his family. And I'm looking forward to having them here. I haven't been able to hear Chris preach in a number of years now. And I've heard good things about the work that they're doing in McMinnville. And I know he's going to do a good job that week for us. So be praying about it, inviting people, Christians and non-Christians alike. And let's see if we can get this building filled up for that meeting. Evil and good are two things that, in my mind anyways, I look at them as being contagious. Now, what I mean by that is, when someone does something that's good to us, or somebody says something good to us or about us, that good often motivates us to do something good in return or say something good in return. However, on the other hand, when someone does something evil to us or says something evil to us or about us, that often is contagious as well. And we seem to be conditioned to desire to want to do something or say something evil back to them. Vengeance is just something that we are conditioned to try to obtain. It's not something that we naturally or inherently have within us, but it's something that I believe society has instilled in the mass population to such a degree that it just seems to be natural. Someone does something to us, we want to do it back. Someone says something to us, we want to say it back. And we look at that as vengeance or payback, as we sometimes call it. As Christians, though, we have to understand that we should be seeking to be better than that. Someone says, well, you know, we're not better than anybody else in the world. Well, I understand in some ways that we shouldn't view ourselves as better than anybody else. We are humans just as anybody else. But Christians, what I mean is, Christians should seek to live better than the world. Meaning, when someone does or says something evil to us or about us, we should not be seeking vengeance as the rest of the world would. We should rather be seeking to do better than that. We shouldn't be seeking to do as the world. We should be seeking to do as did Christ. Why? Because we have a higher standard to which we should attain, a standard that does not include payback or vengeance. And in Romans chapter 12, Paul was instructing the Christians in Rome regarding the first half of the chapter, the perfect will of God. And it's in the last half of the chapter that we find him devoting that section to, we might call, a medley of matters that pertain to the perfect will of God regarding Christian conduct. And among those matters, Paul addressed the topic of vengeance. Beginning in verse number 17, he says, "Recompense to no man evil for evil, provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. There is a very clear precedent that is set here regarding how, as a Christian, I am to react to the presence and the existence of evil in this world. What is it, though, that Paul tries to instill within our hearts and minds regarding this presence of evil, and what my reaction as a child of God should be to it? I think there's three things that we need to realize, or three things that we need to notice, principles that would help us in our understanding and in our handling of evil, so that we do not appear to be as the world. We appear to be as that city set on top of a hill, or the light that we're shining to all the world, or the salt of the earth, to which Christ referred in Matthew 5. Be not overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. How am I going to do that? Well, number one, I think if we're not going to be overcome with evil, we first of all have to understand that evil happens. One of the greatest questions that is still being contemplated in 6,000 years of world history, a question that is still being contemplated by the most respected thinkers in the world, is why does evil exist? Now, you have two schools of thought on that question. Number one, you have those who do not believe in God, and they have a direction or a view upon the question of why evil exists, and that is that where evil developed, or rather they tried to find where evil developed or evolved in the span of history. If the rest of us evolved and our emotions and our reactions evolved from nothing, then where did evil play into that evolution? Or where did evil play into that development? Well, then you have the second school of thought that involves those of us who do believe in God. And for us, there is the difficulty in many minds in reconciling the existence of God and the existence of evil. And that is a major hurdle for countless numbers of people throughout this world. But let's turn to the Bible and ask the question, where did evil originate? Well, it originated in the Garden of Eden, Genesis 3. Because evil is directly related to sin. Sin is evil. Evil is sin. It's the same thing. And so when we ask where did evil come from, we're asking where did sin come from? And it came from man. Man who was created perfect and innocent and placed in an oasis of paradise with the very presence of God to enjoy. And yet man forsook God, thereby allowing evil to enter into the world. Where did evil originate? It originated in Eden. And when they forsook God, evil occurred. And they were required to depart from His presence. And since that time, evil has overcome this world. In Genesis 6 and verse 5, we talked about this morning in Bible class, God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Three chapters, don't know how many years exactly, but just three chapters after sin entered the world, it had overcome the world. And the hearts of man was given continually to that evil. Well, then we flip over a few more chapters to Genesis 11. And in verse 6, the Lord looks down upon the population of the world, and he says, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them. which they have imagined to do. Man had the ability to unite under the concept of evil and allow it to spread rampant upon the face of the earth. Genesis 18 and verse 20, the Lord said, "Because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which has come unto me, and if not, I will know." Just another instance in which sin and evil is illustrated as being ever present in this world. And we could go on and on and on regarding how sin and evil has continually developed and occurred throughout the history of the Bible and since the history of the Bible, even to this current day. And with general evil come evil deeds that are directed toward one another. That's a very sad idea. The fact that we as human beings would look down upon each other to such an extent that we would try to perform acts of evil toward one another. Sad. But that is a fact of life. People's hearts have become so hardened by sin that they sometimes just simply don't think about what they're saying or about what they're doing to others, even among the children of God. And brethren, according to the Scriptures, that is absolutely inexcusable. There can be no excuse for evil, whether said or done. But if we're going to overcome evil with good, we first have to recognize that evil does exist. It happens at times. Should it be restrained? Absolutely. Should it be absolved? Absolutely. But in this world, it happens. We know why. We know where it's come from. And sadly, sometimes we just have to live with it because there's very little that we can do. Understand the presence of evil. Understand that it does exist. But then number two, remember that people watch. Well, what are they watching? They're watching how we react to evil when it is said or done. I remember hearing a story, true story, not an old preacher tale, true story, about an old preacher who was well respected and loved both in his local community and loved throughout the brotherhood for his work and for his stand for the truth. However, just as much as people loved him and respected him, there were people who despised him for the very same thing, even his own brethren. And so one week he was gone for a gospel meeting. Don't know where, but he was gone outside of his local community for a gospel meeting. A group of men who were his enemies decided they were going to set him up to fall. They were going to try to ruin his reputation and ruin his influence. And so what they did was they found out the hotel where he was staying. They found out the room number of the room he was staying in. They hired a lady, a woman, to go to his room and to proposition him. And they figured that even if he didn't give in, the very presence of that woman would wreck his credibility, ruin his influence and his integrity. And he'd never be able to preach the gospel again. And so one evening after service, this brother was resting in his room. There was a knock at the door, and he answered the door only to find this woman with nothing on, standing before him. His enemies were over hiding in the bushes waiting to see what would happen. They were watching. How's he going to respond? Did he know they were watching? I don't know, probably not. But they're watching. How's he going to react to evil? Is he going to give in? Even if he doesn't give in, she's there. She's at his room. It's going to ruin him. We've won. Man opens the door, sees her standing there, immediately falls down to his knees and begins to pray vocally for this lady, for himself. The woman immediately ran away crying. Those men saw what happened. They were watching, hoping that that man would fall. Detestable. But that illustrates to us the fact that people are watching us. Are we always set up the way that brother was? No. But nonetheless, people are watching us. How are we going to react to evil? Are we going to give in to temptation? People are watching. People are anticipating. They look to us as examples whether we know it or not. And there are those who have an honest curiosity as to how we're going to react to evil that's committed to us or others. And they're going to learn from that. And that's going to, in their minds, represent the people of God in general. Is that a huge amount of pressure? Is that immensely something that is to be a burden upon our minds? It will be. But that is the fact of the life of every child of God. People are watching us. How are we going to react? And Jesus made a plea and gave some instruction to His disciples on one occasion in Matthew 5, to which we referred moments ago. He said in verses 14 through 16 that ye are the light of the world. A city that sit on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light to all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Now, we see what Jesus has said. As His disciples, our lives are on display for the world. They're watching us. And His plea and His direction was to do good so that they see good and glorify God. Why? Because they recognize that our lives are a reflection of our God. Okay? Now, if they see us doing good, they can glorify the Father which is in heaven. However, let's turn that around. What if they see us doing evil? What if they see an evil reaction to evil? What if they see us initiate evil? Do we think just because we don't do good that people quit watching? Or just because we don't say good things, people quit listening? Oh no, those eyes are still open. Those ears are still tuned in. And they can either see us do and say good, or they can see and hear us do evil. Choice is up to us. But understand that evil happens, and secondly, remember that people are watching us. How are we going to respond? What is our reaction going to be? Are we going to be as petty as the rest of the world? Are we going to live up to the higher standard that God has set for us? That's the question that has to be in our minds every day. How are we going to answer that? Number three, though, not only should we understand that evil happens and remember that people are watching, number three, know good's power. In other words, know the power of good. It is amazing what can happen when we commit ourselves to doing good to others, even those who consider themselves our enemies. Paul tries to illustrate that point in verse 20 of this chapter where he says, therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, notice what he says, the illustration he presents. In so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. That's not the only place in Scripture we read that quotation. Solomon had said the very same thing by inspiration in Proverbs 25, 21 and 22, where he said, if thine enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat. If he be thirsty, give him water to drink, for thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head, and the Lord shall reward thee. There was a woman once who was involved in a bitter argument with her husband. It was known. It wasn't something that was exactly secret. And she was involved in this bitter argument with him, and she was asked by the preacher at the local congregation on one occasion that whether or not she heaped coals of fire upon his head. mentioning Proverbs 25 and Romans 12. And to this she responded, "Well, no, but I tried a skillet of hot grease." Well, that's not exactly the point that Paul was trying to get across. However, we do find at least one example in the Bible that exists regarding this very point. You remember that when David was a young boy, that early in his life he was actually favored by King Saul. But then as he grew a little bit older, King Saul began to look down upon him because he viewed David as a threat to his power. And so from that point onward, what Saul was completely given to, what his goal in life to do was kill David. Because he figured if he could kill David, his power would be restored to him. His power would not be in question anymore. He wouldn't have to worry about losing it. It would be there. And so everywhere Saul went, everything he did was committed to killing David. What was David's reaction to Saul's acts of vindictiveness toward him? Did David look at the evil that Saul was trying to perform toward him and say, "You know, he's trying to do evil to me, I'm just going to do it back to him. One of us is going to lose at some point. One of us is going to win." That's not what David did. What David did was he heaped coals of fire on Saul's head, because when he had the opportunity to retaliate against Saul, he didn't do it. He refused the desire to retaliate and to get vengeance. And notice what Saul's reaction was when he knew David could have killed him, but he resisted. 1 Samuel 24. Saul comes to learn of the occasion in which David could have gotten his vengeance. And it came to pass that when David had made an end of speaking these words unto Saul, that Saul said, "Is this thy voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And he said to David, "Thou art more righteous than I, for thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded thee evil. And thou hast showed this day how that thou hast dealt well with me. Forasmuch as when the Lord had delivered me into thine hand, thou killedst me not. For if a man find his enemy, will he let him go well away? Wherefore the Lord reward thee good for that thou hast done unto me this day." Near the end of Saul's life, he looked upon David again with joy. He looked at him again with favor. He no longer tried to kill him. He no longer was trying to just keep his power and do away with David. Saul again found favor toward David. What was it, though, that brought him around? What was it, though, that made him change his mind about David? Had vehemently tried to kill him, tried to dispose of his life, and now all of a sudden he finds favor in David once more. What brought that around? Was it because David came back and said, "Well, back at you, man. You tried to kill me, I'm going to try to kill you back"? And Saul finally realized, you know, this boy's just too young and too strong for me. He is going to kill me if I don't let up. Evil didn't do any good. In fact, think about what would happen if David had retaliated with evil. Where do you think that scenario, how that would have played out? One of them eventually would have killed the other one, more than likely. And even if they hadn't killed one another, they would have died with that spirit of vindictiveness within their hearts. Now, Saul wasn't won over because David tried to retaliate with evil. What brought Saul around was David killed him with kindness, you might say. He heaped coals of fire upon his head through kindness. When he had opportunity to have his vengeance, he refused it. He had too much respect for his king. And Saul realized that killing David wouldn't have done him any good. David was the chosen and anointed of God. And Saul's reign truly was over. How is it that they can work out like that? How is it that we can, figuratively speaking, kill people with kindness the way that David did Saul? Why? Because that's what God said will work. Be not overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. That's exactly what it's talking about. And brethren, God's plan will work every time. It will work every single time. And if we're going to overcome evil that is brought toward us from the world, or heaven forbid evil that exists even between brethren, evil will not be overcome with evil. Why? Because God said it won't work. We know it for a fact. We don't even have to try it. Because God said it won't work. Now, the only way we're going to overcome evil is with good. By heaping coals of fire upon the heads of those who deem us enemies. Kill them with kindness, so to speak. Overcome that evil by doing that which we know is right. Treating others with respect. Not trying to be those of vengeance. Evil is going to be overcome by being Christians. If we'll live and act as Christians, evil's not going to be a problem to us. Because Christians love each other too much. Christians are too kind to one another for evil to exist between them. Christians are too merciful to one another. There's too much of a bond of fellowship and brotherhood between Christians for evil to exist and overcome. The only way that evil is going to be overcome is if we live and act as Christians. Why? Because that's God's plan and it'll work every time. So be not overcome with evil, but rather overcome evil with good. As children of God, we cannot afford to act as the world acts. And we cannot afford to respond to evil as the world responds to evil. What we're going to have to do, if we're going to grow, as we can grow as individuals, as human beings, and if we're going to be pleasing to God, we must not be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. And we have an example of goodness that has been shown to a world that was in evil. What is the drawing power of Christianity? Is the drawing power of Christianity God looking down upon mankind who treated God with such evil and spite? And God saying, oh yeah, well I'm bigger and mightier than you, and I can do more evil to you than you can do to me, now let's just duke it out. Is that the drawing power of Christianity? No. The drawing power of Christianity is the fact that God has done to man as God expects man to do among themselves. Man treated God, generally speaking, with more evil than we can imagine. Why? Because we sinned against Him. We rejected Him. We denied Him. We've rubbed His name in the dirt and stomped it into the ground. But God didn't look at mankind and say, you know, man has done evil to me, and so I'm just going to do it back to him. God is not a God of vindictiveness or vengeance. God is God of love and mercy. And so He looked upon man who had done evil and said, no, what I'm going to do is I'm going to love them. I'm going to love them. I'm going to be merciful to them. I'm going to bestow upon them my grace. I'm going to send my own Son to die for them. The drawing power of Christianity is that God Himself has heaped coals of fire upon our head. And the reason that we can overcome evil in our lives is because God has overcome evil by doing good toward us. And so tonight, if you as of yet in your life have not responded to that great goodness that God has bestowed upon us through the sending of His Son, the sacrifice that was made on the cross on our behalf, then we have the opportunity this evening to do just that, to respond to that great goodness. And to have evil taken out of our lives through the blood of His Son. And that can happen right now. We've heard the good news, the gospel. We know the message of it. Do we believe it? Do we believe that Jesus Christ is God's own Son? If so, what's holding us back? Is it sin? Does sin have too strong of a hold on us? Not for one who truly believes. Put that sin away. Turn away from it. Repent of it. Come this evening in humble obedience, confess the great name of Jesus Christ and be immersed in water. And you can have that goodness instilled within your life and you can overcome evil because God has allowed it with His goodness. Or if you're here tonight and as a child of God, you have forsaken that goodness and have gone back into the world, we hope that you'll come back. Put away that evil in your life and put on that goodness once more. Repent of that sin. Confess it. Pray to God for forgiveness. God has not turned His back on any one of us. If our lives are outside of a relationship with God, it's because we've turned our backs on God. But He is right where we left Him. If we'll just come. We hope that you will, while together we stand and sing.